Peter Krantz, you're one of the three principal characters in Faith Healer. It's a very unusual play because it's essentially four monologues.
Yeah, it's the most unusual play I've ever done. I've never had a play in that format at all, and it's been an amazing experience being able to direct address the audience in a way that you've never been able to do before. So I think some people are a little maybe, I don't know what's the word, confused by it, but by the end, I think it all sort of makes sense, the stories that the three characters are telling.
But since you're the only person on stage, if you blow a line, there's nobody there to cover for you.
Absolutely right. That so far nobody has, but occasionally there's, little trims and stuff that happen, and, well, you just keep moving, keep going on. But you're right, there's no other actor to suddenly pick it up keep moving. You have to know your stuff.
How difficult is it to learn lines in a situation like this where it's just you out there?
Well, I didn't really have that much trouble learning it for some reason because, I don't know, I've never really had a lot of trouble learning speeches in plays either. They tend to be the easier things to learn as opposed to dialogue where you need somebody to bounce back with you and share the dial and share the scene, but I always find that it's a monologue is easier to learn. So I didn't have as much trouble with this. Of course, it is a long monologue, so it had to be learned in sections. And for Teddy, he has so many compelling little stories within the story that they're not hard to learn, because they're a story that has a beginning and a middle and an end and like a joke. So a lot of his things are kind of jokes too, so that he's probably rehearsed over time. And so it wasn't that difficult.
One of the things about actor plays or one character plays, and to some extent in what you're doing, is keeping from just standing there and spouting your lines. How much time did you and the other two characters in the show work out how to keep busy on stage?
We had quite a rehearsal time with it, which was, and we never really rehearsed together because, we're not on the stage together, so each actor had, a day or a part of the day. How we moved around and how we decided to do that just came organically through learning it and doing it with the director, and the director helped. Teddy tends to use a bit more of the stage because he's got his record player there, and plus he's drinking a lot of beer, so he's got to go and get his beer and do things like that. So it just sort of came organically, but it's still fairly simple. I move to one chair or I move to another chair, and that's it. And as far as Grace, the wife, she stays in the chair, I think, pretty well the whole time. And it holds because the language is so good and the story is so compelling that the audience is kind of mesmerized into listening. They kind of are forced to listen, otherwise they'll lose it.
What do you think of the play?
I love it. I love the play. When I first read it, I thought, how is this done? How will it work? But the more we got into it and the more we learned the language and the idea of the three stories and how three different takes of shared history can happen. We all have that, a different idea of what a moment was in time compared to somebody else that shared the same moment. And it's so compelling. And Brian Friel is such a brilliant writer of words that they're compelling just listening to the words. That's what I do in my, because I only come in the second act, as you know. So I just listen to the first act and listen to those two characters, and it's I get involved in the story just listening to it over the tannoy.
One of the things that's interesting about your lines and the other two characters' lines as the play goes along is that variant versions of the same situation emerge as to what happened and the baby and all of these other things. Is that interesting to a performer?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what's compelling about the writing, is that there are certain points that each character actually does repeat. And so you get the idea that when those things are repeated, that probably was the real reality, and everybody shared that reality. And so with the director, those are the things we wanted to pinpoint, where the three characters actually did sort of come together and say sort of the same. I think there's lines about the time when we were in a little village in Scotland called Kinloch Burvey, and we all have the same description of where it was, way up in Sutherland, about as far north as you can go in Scotland, looking across at the Isle of Lewis and the Outer Hebrides, and we all have that sort of section, and so that's kind of compelling, interesting too in his writing, how he's done that. And it helps the audience to understand sort of the through line of the story.
The other play you're in is classic Shaw, Major Barbara. It's been done here a number of times, different directors, different slants on the production. That's a very different show. People are on, off, and you get certain characters who get a chance to give great speeches.
Yeah. Fortunately, I'm not one of those characters. However, I do have a big function in that play of helping make the Salvation Army's shelter in the second act a living, breathing place. And I'm one of the starving old man that's been brought in. And so, you know, while I don't really have any speeches, my function is to help create that world of poverty and starvation that she's trying to save. But you're right, there's other characters that have huge long tracks of speeches, and they are so compelling and up to date for what the world's going through right now. The arms races, the morality of selling arms to countries that are just going to use them against their own people. I mean, there's wonderfully compelling arguments in that play, Major Barbara. It's the first time I've done it, and I just love being in it, even though I'm only in the second act. However, I do get to understudy the undershaft, the main character after Barbara, and he has a lot of very, very interesting, compelling speeches that are so apropos.
Have you gone on yet?
Knock on wood, no, I have not. No.
When you're doing a classic Shaw like this, and some of his plays are about events that nobody even remembers what they're about, as opposed to a play like Major Barbara, where you mentioned it remains pretty relevant today, do you get reactions from the audience to some of the stuff that's 100 years old but in a sense isn't?
Let's not forget, a lot of our audience is quite elderly here. They do like those older plays, that we tend to do, probably for that reason. So it's maybe more of the younger people that don't understand some of the references. And we have had to update Shaw. I mean, even Major Barbara, we had to take a lot of stuff out that was references to incidents or people from 1905 that nobody in our audience today would know who they were. So we tend to sort of take, now that we can cut Shaw, we tend to take that stuff out. So, people aren't going to be confused by that kind of thing. But, this is what we are, a company that does plays of a certain period. And for me, if we do them really well, it's an interesting look as to what the world was at one point. And if we can do it with acting that is still modern, so we don't turn the audience off with kind of old-fashioned acting, but tell these wonderful stories in a modern way that way, I think it works wonderfully.
You've worked a lot of seasons here at the Shaw Festival. At the same time, you've gone off and taken breaks to do TV shows and movies and performed on other stages in other theaters, but you always come back to the stages here in Niagara-on-the-Lake.
Yeah. I just found that Shaw and his contemporaries, the plays that we do here, they speak to me, and I for some reason I find the characters that I get to play very interesting. What happened to me is I bought into the whole ensemble idea that Chris Newton started back in the early 80s, because that's when I first started here. And it allowed for not a family, but it allowed for growth of actors, that they could actually make mistakes and not worry about their livelihood. They could triumph and then the next year do something not as amazing. And so it's the ensemble that always brings me back, that the love of acting as opposed to performing.
Have you ever had years when they called you with your potential roles for next season and you said, no, I've got to be in Vancouver to do a movie?
Yeah, I've actually had a couple of times doing that with Stratford, not here, where I've had to say no. When the season is announced and you sort of are given an offer, I have rebelled against an offer, say, and said, well, what about this, and negotiated and figured out something else to do, which is what this place is great for too. You can, negotiate that kind of thing and sort of maybe try and do something different that you haven't done 1 year, and they allow you to do that. They don't try and pigeonhole people into one thing. And you see so many actors now doing the musicals, and that's what they want to do. They want to add richness to the musicals by having good acting in it, as opposed to just singers who can sing.
Any actor in Canada will tell you there are two great ensemble companies. This is one, Stratford is the other. Is it different because so much of Stratford are plays that are 400 years old, about a time and a place, as opposed to Shaw, which is pretty modern, usually?
Yeah. You mean as Stratford being a good ensemble company?
You're both ensemble companies, but the focus of the two companies is so different.
Yeah, it is. I would say that Stratford has always been star-driven. They've always tended to wanted to have big names there. This year they've got Dennehy, and last year Plummer, and but it was sort of built on that, bringing big stars from England back in the 50s when it was first started. So it's never been just an ensemble in that sense of no names, of good actors. Not that there's not good actors there, but they tend to like to elevate their good actors and make them stars, and then it's still sort of a star-driven company. And I think, the plays that they choose for generally sort of fit that, because a lot of those Shakespeare's, you need a big star kind of guy for Hamlet, or say, those big history plays. Whereas here, a lot of those parts are not so iconic. Henry Higgins, maybe, I suppose, but,
I was talking to a couple of performers at Stratford a few weeks ago for interviews. One of the things we talked about was the size of the room. You don't have a room here in Niagara-on-the-Lake that's anything like the Festival Theater up there. Is it different to perform here for that reason?
Yeah, well, never having performed on the big festival in Stratford, I wouldn't know. However, we used to play, when I played cricket, we play cricket every year with Stratford. And when we've had a game at Stratford, we would go and stand on that stage and experience that room. And interesting enough, for how big it is, it's still very intimate. It's an amazing theater. One day I would love to play it. But yeah, the theaters here are much more intimate. And, even if take the courthouse, for instance, your audience is basically in your face. You can't, there's no way of escaping, So it's a wonderful acting company, the spaces here. The festival space is beautiful. The acoustics are incredible. And the two smaller theaters, too, have their ups and downs, but they're both wonderful to play in.
Is that different from doing TV? TV, you're talking to a camera and the red light comes on and this sort of thing, or doing movies. Do you act differently?
Yeah. I haven't done film and TV for a while, but when I did, it was always less, and if you've been acting on the stage for a while, you sort of have to gear yourself into, not really moving her mouth too much, and you know, not being so expressive, you know, and so yeah, it's a whole different exercise, and you never get to rehearse, and so you know, it's always sort of you have to, you know, paint by numbers basically with film and television, unless of course you have a big part in a big movie and you get a director who decides that rehearsing is a good thing. So for me, the stage is really where real acting happens.
You've mentioned rehearsals twice, once for Faith Healer and once just now. How important is it that here, and I suppose at Stratford, you get a lot of rehearsal time and you get a lot of time in previews before the big night or the big afternoon arrives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really important. And it's like, it's almost some of my favorite time is the rehearsing and the discovering and the I love it. The first day of rehearsal for me is the happiest time, you know, meeting the cast and, you know, figuring out why we want to do this, what it all means, and yeah, you don't get to, you know, the other medium of television film is so director driven. Whereas here, it's really about communicating with your fellow actors and you know, working organically and creating a character through time and making mistakes, making discoveries. You don't get to do that with film and TV, so it's a different thing.
When you arrive for the beginning of rehearsals, do you have your lines down?
No. I was tempted to do that for Teddy because, you know, it's a 45-minute monologue, and I thought, wow. But when I started to learn it before, I did start to try and learn it, and it became pretty easy to learn, so I thought, well, maybe I should just wait until I talk to the director a bit more because the problem with that is that you can, you know, learn it, and then you've made choices within it that might be wrong or might not work. And then it's hard to get out of that because you've already sort of learned it one way. So I find it better to wait. Certainly with plays that, you know, where I have to work with other actors, I definitely wait because you never know what the other actor is going to be giving you.
You've made a life in the theater, but you have a family, you have kids. Do you make different choices in the plays you do and where you do them because you have a family?
Yeah, it's not. Well, both my kids have fled the nest, so to speak. So, and I have five kids between my second wife and myself. So we've got a Brady Bunch going on of teens and young adults. So yeah, it's not as if I can suddenly decide, oh, I'm going to go to the Yukon for, you know, a month. Because, and also, it's another reason why I love Niagara Lake, because I did sort of settle here, and it's a beautiful place to live. So, you know, a lot of people go back to Toronto, but I've decided to live here. So, the choices I make are definitely with my family in mind.
But you can work in the off season. You could do Toronto, for example, or go on the road to Halifax or Calgary or wherever.
Yes, and I have. A couple of years ago, we did Harvey here to great success, where I played Elwood Dowd, and then a year after that, I went to the University of North Colorado to reprise the role with the students there. So, and you know, my wife generally comes with me for a bit, or, you know, we don't like to be apart too long.
What's the role you would like Jackie Maxwell to give you for next season?
Well, she's not doing the play that I want to be in, but I don't know. I haven't really read all the plays. I know Arms and the Man. I know The Philanderer, which are two plays she's talking about, and I think maybe I'm a little too old for those plays. I was in The Philanderer last time. The Philadelphia Story is another one that I'd be interested in, but you know, you never know. Maybe the MC and then the cabaret.
Have you thought about writing your own play?
I've dabbled in that. My father was a writer. He was a television writer, and so I have that sort of in my blood. I had a few treatments I've done, and I've written some stuff. there's an adaptation of a Shaw play that I'm sort of working on. So, yeah.
Thank you, Peter Krantz.
Thank you.